Welcome to our Friday Five Live podcast hosted by Meg Foster. Meg has spent 20 years in higher education focused on student success initiatives and working in areas such as orientation, faculty development, online learning, student leadership, and first-year initiatives.
Well, welcome, everyone. We're so excited that you are here with us today. And just as a friendly reminder, if you're new to our Friday Five Live, ultimately, this does become a podcast and you can share this widely with folks. I like to think we pair nicely with a good walk or a cup of tea on campus. We love the chat. So please do put your questions in here for Karen, and we will make sure that we weave those into our conversation today. Karen and I think, had fun last week getting the opportunity to connect kind of ahead of today's conversation. And I'm just really so excited to get to learn with you, learn from you. I know you're going to kind of walk us through some actual strategies that we could implement on Monday when you're rolling back to campus in your first meeting of the day. So just as a reminder, Karen, and where has worked as Director of Strategic Initiatives, right? Did I get that right?
Correct, yes.
That is making this transition in her role at Naropa. So just thank you for sharing your time with us today, Karen. Wanted to give you
I'm so happy to be here.
Yeah,
thank
do you want to kick us off with kind of what we had talked about on Friday, or do you want me to jump into the questions? You let me know.
I would love to get us started with a practice that we do here at Naropa University. And I don't know how much you all know about Naropa University, but this is a small, private, Buddhist-inspired university in Boulder, Colorado. Oh my gosh, my camera stopped, I think. How fun. Okay. Well, anyway, we're fortunate enough here to have lots of experts in different contemplative practices, and also for that to have been an integral part of the administration and the workings of the institution since 1974. So I would love to start us off with a small contemplative practice that we do at Naropa University, and it's a practice to mark arrival. And it's not compulsory, but I am going to explain it, and then I'll give you all the opportunity to join in with me if you like. So at Naropa, in classes, meetings, events, we bow to start our time together and to end our time together. And the bow is, it is this tiny mindfulness practice. But it does really help to draw attention to what we're about to do together. And to, we would say at Naropa, establish the container, but to kind of define the space. So you'll if you were a fan of Naropa or a student or a faculty member, you'll hear this described a number of different ways. And this is my personal kind of description of it. So the first part of the bow is to come into the space. And we mean, like, yes, physically get there. And we're remote today, so our space is in the virtual. But we come into the space really by grounding ourselves. So you put your feet on the floor, you put your hands on your thighs, you turn on your senses, right? So this would be the time to shake off any tension in your shoulders, to notice what you're hearing, what you're smelling, the temperature of the air. You know, if you have any sort of cricks, this is when you address those and shake them out. So we come into the space and we acknowledge the space that we're in. The second part of the bow is to open up. So you do this kind of physically by broadening your chest. And also, I say to myself, okay, here we are. Friday. It's morning for me. I'm with innovative educators. We're going to share some practices here that are focused on resilience, right? So you get ready and you tell yourself, this is what we're going to do. And then the third part is to turn your attention outward. Okay, so the first bits are inward, and the last part is to turn your attention outward. And this is where you get ready to hear what's going to happen. You acknowledge what other people are bringing into the space. And then finally, you offer what you yourself are bringing. And that offering is the bow itself. So you just kind of dip forward and bow. And that's a long explanation for something that takes moments. So I'm going to do this. And if you'd like to join in with me, and like I said, it's not at all compulsory. It's not compulsory for our own community, but it does feel pretty good. So if you'd like to, please join me. Thank you.
Well, thank you, Karen. How long have you all, is that been since the 70s that that practice has been on campus as part of that culture? And how does
Yeah.
that feel? I'm just curious, as you bring new people in or as you made that transition to Naropa, what did that kind of feel like getting, I mean, because I don't know about anybody else today, but like my experience is often we're sprinting into meetings, right? Like there's, it's just like, okay, here I am. Like, hope I didn't spill anything on the way, kind of thing.
Yeah, I mean that definitely all of the regular life tags along with Naropa people as well. And the bow really does happen. It really does happen, and it just it's drawing everyone's attention to the now. And it helps us leave what we've been carrying with us at the door as much as we can. And, contemplative practices are just that, they're practices. It keeps, you do have to constantly revisit what's going on internally to be like, okay, all right, and draw your attention back to the work at hand. But the bow is, it's really quick. And it's a nice way to say, we're going to focus on this right now. And then the cascading moments of now that follow.
And that's such a wonderful segue into this whole idea of, today we're really kind of focused on this idea of contemplative leadership, right? And kind of what does that mean? And what does that look like? I mean, you shared an example, right, of what that begins to look like, but what does that look like in an educational setting? And you've worked in other institutions other than Naropa, which I think is really helpful, right? Because you have that kind of tapestry, so to speak, of understanding that not all institutions are Naropa, right? We're all a little different in our approach.
So I'm gonna speak from my own personal experience. I am a move fast, many things all at once kind of person. I am very much future oriented. I'm always planning, and if that title, the strategy, doesn't tip you off, like I'm a futurist. I am looking and kind of living way in the future. And yeah, and for me personally, everything feels like a race, which, whatever, it's just like my own personal way in the world. And I have found that I am better able to do all of those things and actually move with greater speed if I can be disciplined enough to commit to my own planning and commit to focusing on, the work at hand when it's happening, so that I And like I said, it's a practice. So I'm constantly pulling back and saying, oh goodness, we're actually, I have to focus on this right now. And that's especially helpful when mentoring and supervising, when you can really like fully connect with someone and what they're saying, and you're not running through, what you need to do and what's going to happen later. And especially if I've done my preparation work, then we have an agenda and I don't have to worry about making sure I hit those points because it's all listed out. We know what's coming next, and you can really focus on what's happening in the moment, which is, I would say that's been the biggest change in my leadership and my sort of professionalism in the past decade since coming to Naropa, and it's helped me tremendously.
Well, and one of the words that you kind of said that I think, and it's interesting, I feel like this is a theme in our podcast discussions, is that kind of idea of you're being so authentic with yourself, right? You acknowledged this is who I am. And Shaquana put on in the chat that she identifies as a chaos gremlin. I mean, I think that's a great title, right? Like, but you know yourself. You know it's constantly a race. I'm somebody who's always in motion, getting things done, and you thrive in that, clearly, right? And so being able to, I don't think this is a shift in focus. I think it's a lens, maybe is the better word in my opinion, that you have this lens of contemplative practice, right? That you've added to your professional toolkit. I don't know if that may not be the right.
Right. So I want to give you all a visual that really helped me understand. And I, okay, let me back up and say a lot of people come to Naropa because they have personal practices that align with what Naropa teaches, and then they seek out an opportunity to be there. And I came about it a different way, and I wound up at Naropa, and I was like, wow, this is really useful. Like what the entire community is working on in addition to their scholarship is, it was kind of useful for everyone. So one of the images that helped me understand contemplative practice and understand the value of it is the fact that when you are really aware of what's happening, you have not only a focus, but an awareness of what's happening around you. And so the image of this that helped me understand is imagine carrying an egg on a spoon through a cocktail party. So when you are in contemplative practice, you're developing that focus on the egg. Don't drop the egg. Totally connected to the egg. And for me, I equate that to who am I? What is happening in my own body, right? So you're focused on the egg, and you have to be aware of those environmental factors of that cocktail party as you walk through the cocktail party. And that really helped me understand and be able to put a lot of the things that are centuries-old teachings into sort of daily work practice.
Because you had that metaphor to do. This is not on our list of questions. Do you have any sort of, I don't know, professional certification? Like, what kind of outside of absorbing these practices because of the institution that you're in, right? Have you done any sort of advanced study or
Am I
anything?
a meditation instructor? No. Am I a yoga teacher? I'm not. Am I a chaplain? I'm not. But these practices, and there's so many, so many, are incredibly accessible. And I've done a lot of reading, and I've done a lot of reading from traditional teachers and kind of modern teachers. And being in the admissions realm, the job is to translate what's happening at the institution to the people who may want to join you. Like, you have to give them an accurate portrayal of what this is like. And so because of that, I've had the privilege of being in this space where I get to look at all of these different ways of knowing and being and translate them so that people can understand. And contemplative practice, like, yes, it can happen in a meditation hall on a cushion with someone guiding you through prompts. It can also happen while you're fishing and looking at the water.
Right.
It can happen when you're doing dishes. It can happen when you're pulling weeds. And it's this very human experience that I guarantee you've all had. So when you lose track of time and you find yourself completely absorbed in an activity, and then you kind of come back to everything else, well, you were being really mindful and you were being completely immersed in what was happening. And contemplative practices really are about awareness of your own mind and your own body, so that you know when you are being mindful and you are connected and when you're not. So I've picked up a whole lot from these experts here at Naropa, so that I can pick up on my own bodily cues, and I know when I need to take a beat, I need to take a step back and kind of gather myself, because I'm, you know, having a reaction that is closer to the amygdala and the fight flight responses, and not in my reasoning centers where I want them to be.
You mentioned when we talked earlier about, you know, this idea of kind of when we have these practices, how does that shape an institution, shape our culture? But we really talked about it too with how it shapes our teams. And, you know, one of the things that I really want to focus on, I mean, we just, you know, we've talked, you and I have spoken about, you know, burnout in our field. So many good people leaving because they're just overwhelmed. We work a lot with TRIO folks, and they're constantly understaffed. And I had a conversation yesterday with somebody who was like, yes, I'm doing this job, and I'm also now the head of retention. And I was like, well, that's two full-time jobs. I'm sorry. Like, how does that work? Exactly. So yeah, what are you seeing as far as how contemplative leadership is helping build teams where you're better able to support, mentor, retain folks?
So, I mean, I will say that Naropa has all of those same challenges. Okay. So this is, I'm not coming from a place where it's perfect and it's like this utopia and people aren't ever upset or leave. Like, that happens. But I think that, if you're in the practice of paying attention to what's happening right now, right, and to observing, in a lot of cases with it, well, I mean, you should be observing without judgment to start, and then you start to troubleshoot. But if you're in the practice of paying attention and observing, then you can catch really quickly and acknowledge when things are changing. And the only thing that I know for certain is that we're all going to experience a lot of change, right? And so I'm a planner, I'm a strategist, and I lay things out far in advance. And if I were not paying attention to what's happening right now, you could get really far off course really quickly. And so that applies in kind of the largest sense, where I'm talking about university strategy, in which direction are we going, and being nimble. And it also applies in sort of personal interactions and your own, you know, assessment of yourself. So goals that I may have laid out for myself, and I think, you know, I'm on this track and this is something that I want, if I hold it too rigidly, I may very well miss opportunities or get myself into a situation that's not so beneficial. And I think it's the same with your teams. And you're all going to have different strengths for sure. But if you, I think we're all better off if we can commit to paying attention and acknowledging what's coming up. And it seems like such a small thing, but it's really big. And when you acknowledge what's coming up, often that means that you have to acknowledge when you were wrong. And that's fine. That's how we grow, right?
Because as you say it, as such an important reminder, this is all practice. So we're practicing. It's not perfection. In fact, I have this sticky note that hangs right above my head. Don't let the perfect be the enemy of the good, right? Like this is practice. It's not perfection.
Right.
And I love that vision of, because I am a type A firstborn. This girl loves a checklist. Nothing brings me greater joy than planning. What's it gonna, but if we hold too rigidly to those goals, to those plans, and I do think we, I mean, I know this, and some people have said this in the chat, the current state of affairs in higher education is really requiring us to live into ambiguity in a way that I think we've always had to live in ambiguity, but it's real big. Those ambiguity seas are real deep right now. And how are we, so when we are practicing being present, I do think that gives us a really important skill set, ability, mindset to be able to navigate that space of ambiguity and constant change in a much healthier way. Because I know I've spent many months this, I don't know about anybody else, but many months this semester feeling pretty angry about some stuff. But I can't live in that because it doesn't serve me, it's not healthy for me, and it doesn't serve the students that I work with or the team that I'm on. So.
I don't have any answers to that one, but I mean, I hear you and I feel it. And what I can say, what I do know would be helpful and helpful for everyone very broadly is to pay attention to yourself. And just like in the sort of brief bow that we did, where you turn your attention inward and you acknowledge what are you feeling in your body and what is happening around you. Doing that regularly and checking in with yourself is only going to benefit you. So if you understand how you're feeling and why, maybe you'll be able to at a certain point say, uh-oh, I'm in a cycle that I know I go into and I'm freezing. And I know that that is a stress response, and I know why I have this stress response, but you're not going to be able to make decisions that feel good, that set you up, that are in line with what you want for yourself if you are making those decisions based off of a knee-jerk reaction. Super helpful for dealing with mountain lions. Not so helpful for dealing with federal loan changes, right? So knowing where you're at and how your brain is operating can be really valuable. And then there are lots and lots and lots of ways where you can get from being in that stress type response to a more controlled, proactive response. And this is following your breath or doing a little bit of reflective writing, or there's a litany of contemplative practices and short ones that you all can tap into. And there are so many experts out there, and I am not that expert. I know what works for me, and I know the experiences that I've had, but if you want to learn how to get from your amygdala to your central cort your frontal cortex with a few breaths, there's a lot of good teachers out there who can help you do that.
It's great advice. I have found that reading all of the higher ed news while walking on my walking pad has been what works for me right now. That allows me to release some of the energy
Right.
as I'm walking. Tell me about what you're seeing as far as contemplative leadership, your practices, and kind of mentoring and guiding these teams that you're on. Because we talked a little bit about maybe how you've seen that help with, retention of employees, development, growth for folks.
Sure. I think you I'm about to move into a new team here. And I know them all, but I will be, supervisor, and I'll have a whole new team. And some of the first things that I'll do will be to ask why of the people who will work with me. Why do they do it? What do they want out of it? What feels good? What do they want to lean into? Where do they think they have opportunities to grow personally? But to really understand someone's personal motivation and how it lines up within the team. I feel like if you cannot help people along their own growth trajectory, then you need to really examine yourself as a supervisor. So there's the work at hand, and there's things that need to get done, and there's a litany of ways to do that. And there's so many opportunities for people to explore their growth edges, is what people at Naropa would say, and say, this is an area where I could really grow and I want to grow. And as a supervisor, as a leader, I think it's my job to hold all of those, like personal, deep goals in line with our own departmental targets and the work that we have to do. I think it is terribly important to know what your key performance indicators are, and for everyone to understand how they contribute to larger goals. In my experience, most folks that I've come across in higher ed have really solid intentions, and they want to do well, and they push themselves to do well. And it takes an understanding of that larger structure and the ability to see like what success looks like to help people feel like the work they're doing is meaningful, that it is worthwhile. So, I mean, KPIs, everybody knows about that. And there can be a real pushback because of the structure, because it's so business. And I think it's actually incredibly helpful, especially when you understand when the people who are responsible for those things understand it, and you can help them align their own personal goals to those.
Do you all do KPIs as part of your strategic plan? Like
It sort of cascades from it. So there are the largest goals in the university strategic plan, and then it's broken down, but every individual It, their work is tracked to larger university goals.
Have you seen, we've talked about staff and teams, and but what about students? Like, and I know students are seeking out Naropa, right? Because of the institutional culture, or because of its history, because of, who it is as an organization. But just wondering, if we were to apply some of these contemplative practices, at my community college, or at another four-year institution. What do you think kind of happens then for your student population?
So I'm going to start by saying that I am at Naropa because I think that contemplative education and the benefits of integrating contemplative in your contemplative practice in your life are just so incredibly valuable. I think it's the best thing that we can do for resilience. So from that platform, I'm going to say the only thing that we really know is the we don't know what's coming, right? And we have to pay attention to what's happening to be able to make choices that feel right for ourselves. If you're at a community college, the people who are in your course are caring for children, holding down a job or two. They, maybe are dealing with assaults on their community because of their identities, right? And they're trying to do an anthropology class. That's a lot. That's a lot. And just like we did in that bow, we turned our attention to the work at hand and we left everything else at the door. And like, granted, people have to have their basic needs met before they can start to do the work of, an anthropology course. But to take a minute to say all of those things are going to be there in an hour's time, right? And you can get back to them. But for now, we need to focus on this work. I think it's tremendously helpful. It makes that work more productive. It helps, helps ingrain the information and helps people connect to it. And then when they leave the class, they can get back to everything else.
Yeah, I would, I've tried to do some of that modeling in my own class, and I'm curious if people are doing that at all with their students, their advisees. We're all come from different places in higher education, but saying, okay, we're going to leave the world at the door, and for our 50 minutes together, we're just going to be here. We're going to be present, and we're going to put away the phones and put away all the things that, distract us from this community that we've built, and be very intentional about that. And I think that's a good check for me too, because I often feel like I fly into a class. All right, okay, here we are. I haven't had that time to do that sort of check in with myself and, become mentally prepared for the work ahead. So,
It's a practice, right?
right.
And I think it's very easy to say, I don't have time for this. As somebody who is constantly racing, I have these feelings like I don't have time for this. And I can tell you that I can't afford not to take the time. That it really it has pretty big downstream impacts. When I take the time to focus and when I don't. And when I find myself kind of in a rat's nest, that's when I'm like, okay, let's do some planning. Let's do some reflection. Let's try and get the linen closet in order again. Because it makes a huge difference. I know that I can go about my work and really commit to it if all of those towels are folded nicely. Like,
Yeah, I feel you, and I have a linen closet that's been calling me now actually for several weeks. So I think that's a really great segue into how can you get some buy-in? I'm thinking about, people listening to this, and you're at your organization and you're thinking, yes, I hear what Karen's saying. I want to institute some of these practices, but there's just a lot of skeptics. Like I'm pretty
Oh, for
sure.
sure.
Yeah. So any advice about how we can gently guide?
Sure. So if you if you have the benefit of being in a leadership position, I think it's really useful to focus on personal goals and to know what individuals want out of an interaction, out of an engagement, out of their employment, right? And if you can line up these practices to support those personal goals, and like, spoiler alert, that's what they do, right? They help us be better in community, but they help us also understand why we do things personally. That's not such a hard thing to get people to buy in on because everyone is self-interested, right? So that's one thing. And in the spaces where you are with a colleague, or you don't have the power in the room, taking responsibility for your own energy in a space and for your own reaction has a tremendous impact. So, I mean, I often revisit, and this is terrible. Like, I revisit the times when I did not react well and I acted out of stress and I said things sort of like offhand, and I'm happy to report that those things are fewer and farther between. The more I focus on, okay, what is this information and how am I feeling about it? And let me get myself in a decent place so that I can formulate a response. And sometimes that's asking for a minute and saying, could I get back to you after this meeting on these points? And sometimes it's getting your thoughts clear before you offer. But if you can do that for yourself, I mean, it's better for yourself and it has an impact on the people around you.
So if we're not in a leadership position, really starting at this place of self, right? And if we are in a
Absolutely.
leadership position, then having the opportunity maybe to begin to say, what would our team look like? Let's explore this together. How would this feel?
Exactly.
How could this
Exactly.
and yes, appealing to the skeptics. I love the idea of, this feeds into your goals for yourself, your goals for yourself personally and professionally here within this organization. Because I think that helps give it structure and meaning. Because I know we're all inundated all the time, right? By you need to know this, and you here's a new system, and here's new training, and so I could send. I mean, if you rolled into my meeting tomorrow and you were like, "All right, well, we're now going to practice this." Oh gosh, it's just like one more thing I have to add on, right? But when you give it the context and the explanation. It isn't this overwhelming ask that I need you to get trained in some new complex system, right?
No, it's not, it doesn't have to be overwhelming. And I think it's good to ask people how they feel about certain things. And it is like the definition of touchy-feely, but also how someone feels about something has, such far-reaching impact. And if you can follow those how do you feel questions with why, oh, there's some really valuable information that comes out.
Well, and I'm often struck right now by how we I higher ed, we can do all these things for students, right? We would treat students with this kind of, but we don't do that for ourselves, or right? I mean, I think there's this constant
And oh my goodness. There are so many folks who have a very damaging internal dialogue. Things that they would never, ever, ever, ever say to a student, or we talk about bystander intervention a lot. And how do you step up and how do you enter a space where you're like, this is really damaging? And do we do that for ourselves?
Yeah.
I think we should.
Right. And a lot of it is just not knowing, right? You've never been taught. You don't have that exposure, experience, or training, or
Right.
language.
Right.
So.
It's the business of reflection. Once you start to do it, it's something that you can't undo. And I think it's really beneficial. So if you start to, just in the way that you would ask a teammate, how do you feel about this and why? If you do that for yourself, you can understand either the how and why of your reactions. And there are lots of big things happening right now that also make me angry. And I don't want to disconnect, but I also don't want to have a stroke. So I'm trying to balance, what is coming at me with what can I do?
And how
And
to take care of myself in that, right?
how do I take care of myself in that? And the plans that I laid out 6 months ago,
Right.
not a lot of them are still things that I want to prioritize because the environment is so terribly different right now.
Yeah.
So.
Well, Karen, we've almost come to the end of our time together. It always goes by way too fast. Any final thoughts you want to wrap us up with? As Shelby's asked, does Naropa have any summer internships for out-of-state students? Can we find more information on the university website?
You can find information on the university website, and there are kind of public access programs through the Center for the Advancement of Contemplative Education. So I would definitely encourage you all to check in on those if you like. There's so many phenomenal teachers out there, and if you're curious, I'm sure you can find people that would be really helpful to you. And the last thing that I want to say is pay attention to yourself and be kind to yourself and take care of yourself.
Yeah. Such good advice when we're in a place, and we talked about this, that I think we kind of in higher ed felt like we've survived the pandemic, right? We're back sort of to normal, whatever that looks like. And things were gonna feel a little bit easier. And I don't think it's felt that way for a lot of us. And the work is, yeah. So I feel like we constantly need to be reminded to be gentle. It's okay to take care of yourself. It's very important to do that. Yeah. So thank you. And people have made wonderful comments about the importance of mindfulness and their work with students so that they can continue to do that work, that important work that they're doing. So, Karen, thank you so much.
You're very welcome. And with a minute to go,
Yeah.
I would
Sure.
suggest that we bow. That's how we
I love
end
that.
meetings.
You read my mind. I was going to say, Karen, do you want to wrap us up?
I do. I do. Okay. Thank you, everyone. We have arrived at the end.
Thank you. Thank you, Karen. Thank you for everyone listening in today. We hope that you find time and for rest and renewal in your week ahead and continue so that you can continue to do the important work that you're doing at your institutions. I do want to invite everybody. We're going to do Friday Five Live next Friday. Karen, very different topic. We're going to talk about legal issues in higher education and everything that's happened really in the last
Remember to breathe.
2 or 3 months, right? We will practice the contemplative as we ease into that conversation. So that again will be next Friday, the 25th, at 12 o'clock Eastern. So hope you'll join us for that or share that with the folks on your campus who would most benefit from listening into that conversation too. Karen, I hope you have a wonderful weekend and there's time for rest and renewal in your weekend ahead.
You too.
Thank you.
Thanks,
Thanks.
everyone.
Take care.
Friday 5 Live is brought to you by Innovative Educators. Innovative Educators offers 6 online services for your onboarding support and training needs. Visit us at innovativeeducators.org to see how we can support your student success initiatives.